Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and it's relatively temperate out there. Doesn't feel too bad out there, as Engineer Bob said. It's the humidity that's out there, but it actually feels pretty comfortable out there, Dave.
It's not a dry humidity.
What is a dry humidity?
Well, they always talk about the dry heat in Arizona and in the in the desert, and so that when it's very hot there, because there's no humidity, it's a dry heat as opposed to a wet.
Yes, but it's a dry heat, not dry humidity.
I'm just seeing if you're paying attention.
Okay, fine. Yes, I am listening. I am listening. Thanks a lot, Dave. Well, we've been speaking this morning, obviously, about the inauguration of a new president. And also last week we had committee hearings going on as Senate confirmation hearings. And one of the more interesting ones was Betsy DeVos of Michigan, who is the Trump nominee for education secretary, and she's come under sharp criticism from Democrats, but she had one of the more interesting answers of a cabinet nominee when a question was posed to her by Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, and that Democratic senator has been vocal about gun control in the wake of the Sandy Hook school massacre.
Do you think that guns have any place in or around schools?
I think that's best left to locales and states to decide. If the underlying question is,
you can't say definitively today that guns shouldn't be in schools.
Well, I will refer back to Senator Enzi and the school that he was talking about in Wapiti, Wyoming. I think probably there, I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
Yes, the emergency gun for grizzlies. There was a lighter moment in these confirmation hearings, and that's when Trump's energy secretary nominee, who's former Texas Governor Rick Perry, when Rick Perry was being questioned by Minnesota Democratic Senator Al Franken, a former cast member of Saturday Night Live.
Senator Franken.
Governor, thank you so much for coming into my office. Did you enjoy meeting me?
I hope you were as much fun on that dais as you were on your couch.
Well.
May I rephrase that, sir?
Please. 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 Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord.
Well, I think we found our Saturday Night Live soundbite.
That's Senator Al Franken and former Texas Governor Rick Perry. Well, joining me now on the phone is our good friend of the program, always a good personal friend as well, David Yepsen, the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, former national political reporter and columnist for the Des Moines Register. And David, back in Des Moines, he's now the host of Iowa Politics on Iowa Public Television. David, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's good to be back, Rick. I'm going to have a hard time topping Rick Perry.
Well, you know,
what he should have said was oops.
Oops, exactly. Oops. And frankly, it was interesting that he was able to say that after favoring getting rid of the department, that now that he's going to be the cabinet secretary for, he favors keeping the Department of Energy.
Well, I do give him some credit. It's pretty rare that you hear politicians say, you know, I was wrong. I made a mistake. And it was actually kind of refreshing because we hear this rhetoric out of politicians. Oh, we're going to do away with this. We're going to do away with that. Then it never happens, and they sort of lose credibility. So, it struck me as a little refreshing.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, we've been talking this morning about, obviously, the inaugural speech as well as the first 48 hours of this new presidency. By the way, I want to point out that the president has issued a new tweet after earlier saying watched protests yesterday, but was under this under the impression that we just had an election. Why didn't these people vote? Celebs hurt cause badly. His latest tweet is, peaceful protests are a hallmark of our democracy. Even if I don't always agree, I recognize the rights of people to express their views. I don't know what to say, because this is the Trump presidency, and no one knows. And it veers this way, it veers that way. I mean, we may need to keep Obamacare for the whiplash coverage.
You know, I was out having breakfast yesterday morning, and the people, couple sitting next to me who were Trump voters, one of her comments was, I just wish he'd quit this tweeting. It was a powerful tool in the campaign, but he's got to manage it better in the Oval Office. He can move markets. He can break businesses with this stuff. And, you know, I'm sure he's been told to be a little more careful with those tweets. But, you know, Rick, he's talking about protests. And as I watched those protests, I was thinking back to the Vietnam War era. And it's great to have protests, and it is a great part of our history, as you've mentioned earlier today. But I think if those people want to have an impact on politics, if they want to have an impact on things, if everybody in Chicago who was at that protest in 4 years will get in their cars and drive straight north and start knocking on doors in Wisconsin, they'll have an impact. You know, in the Vietnam War, there were a lot of demonstrations, but it started to have an impact when a bunch of college students went to New Hampshire and turned out a huge vote for Gene McCarthy. We're going to have battles for the House of Representatives and for the U.S. Senate in 2 years. And, you know, among the things that the progressives have to do is they've got to get out to vote. You know, let's find another 10,000 votes in Wisconsin. Go into Milwaukee and change that vote. Go into Michigan and change the vote in Detroit. Let's get the black turnout better in Philadelphia. Those three states changed the election. You and I aren't having this conversation. So in terms of the focus on, well, what do we do now for the progressive movement, it's got to be getting off your duff and knocking on doors in elections and turning out your voters. Didn't do a good enough job last time. He won.
But how is that? It's complicated, though, by the fact of, you know, what is going to be the new direction of the Democratic Party?
That's true, and they're going to have that discussion. But at the end of the day, and they're having it all over right now, there was this debate going on with among Bernie Sanders people about do they support Hillary Clinton. I think there may be people in the Democratic Party today who are having second thoughts about their unwillingness to be a little more supportive of Hillary Clinton. Millennial turnout was not what it has been in the past. African-American turnout was not what it's been in the past. So what are Democrats going to do to correct that in 2 years and in 4 years?
I mean, it's kind of like as we talked before about, you know, Republicans were already planning to do their second autopsy of the party and Donald Trump wins, and it's the Democrats now faced with having to do the autopsy of their party.
That's right. And one autopsy that always happens is how is our voter turnout effort? And you talk to political operatives in Wisconsin, and what everything I can hear understand is Republicans did a pretty good job with their turnout operations. So Democrats have to shape up.
We're speaking with David Yepsen. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and we're speaking with David Yepsen. David, I was curious what your take of the inaugural address by the new president. I found it to be very kind of, like a lot of people, I think, looking at it, found it kind of dark.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that, especially for an inaugural, which you expect to be a little more uplifting. You know, I was listening to that and thinking, well, this is a campaign speech. The campaign's over, and he now has to start working with some of these people who he vilified. And he, you know, shows some signs of doing that once in a while. He can be very gracious. You know, he gives an inaugural speech like that, and then he turns around and goes in to have lunch and very graciously recognizes Hillary Clinton and President Clinton. So I just thought it was probably a little too dark. I like the fact it was short. He laid out his case very clearly. It's a wake-up call to Americans that there are a lot of people, a lot of his voters, who have been left behind in a lot of this prosperity. So I think that the problem was it was just a tactical thing, picking too many fights you didn't need to pick. Need a little more uplifting.
So we could go from that, and then we have this whole issue of yesterday where we have the beatdown on the press, and Sean Spicer's first real appearance in the Brady briefing room to deliver this kind of smackdown, and in doing so, not telling the truth.
Yeah, you know, I thought Pat Brady had a good line earlier that it was a hostage video. Spicer was clearly told by the president, "You go out there and talk." It was foolish. It was a waste of chips. The president of the United States has one real power, and that's the power to persuade, whether it's members of Congress or public opinion. And when the White House wastes its energy going out with talking about something as foolish as crowd sizes, you waste chits. And then on top of that, he was just flat out wrong.
Right.
And you can go online and you can look at the videos that are there of the malls about turnout, and it just – it's clear this was a pretty lousy turnout as inaugurals go. So what? He's president. Let's move on. He ought to be worrying about what he's going to do about trade and how he's going to replace Obamacare. It was just I don't know. Let's put it down to new employee jitters, if you will. They've got to get recalibrated a bit.
Although some people suggested, too, that this was a way to turn attention back onto Donald Trump and the administration and away from yesterday's marches.
Well, okay, it did a little bit, but it didn't work because the issue became Spicer wasting time, telling a falsehood, and it also didn't take away from those marches at all. It was an incredible story that occurred with those marches.
The president also made a stop at the headquarters in Langley of the CIA, and I thought, and it didn't get much coverage, but one thing that I thought was interesting was in between talking about himself and how many votes he got and how many covers of Time magazine he made, but he also talked about how the U.S. made the wrong play when it went into Iraq. And as he has said in the campaign, you know, we should have kept the oil. He told these members of the CIA, he goes, who knows, you may get a chance to do that.
Yeah. You know, the problem with that appearance, I thought, was saying those kind of things in front of that wall. And you heard some pushback from the intelligence community. That's really a sacred place for many Americans, and particularly because it represents the lives of people who have died on behalf of this country, many of whom we don't even know their names.
Correct.
And it's like you wouldn't go out to the Vietnam Memorial Wall and give a speech like that. And so he was a little out of sync with the tone of his remarks. He needs to be healing up things with the intelligence community. He knows that. He was trying to do that. But then he ambles off into this other stuff. So it's we need to stay on message, Mr. President.
So who do you think has advantage in Washington right now? Do you think it's the Republican-controlled leaders of Congress or the president?
I don't think that's clear yet, Rick. It's a good question. The president sets the agenda. He's clearly got some momentum inside the party. Now they've got to start producing some results. The question of what do you replace Obamacare with? The trade issue. It's easy to bash trade, but the first people that are going to get hurt in the trade war is going to be our blue-collar Americans. You want to start a trade war with China, all of a sudden they're not buying pork, and all those rural people in Iowa who voted for Donald Trump are going to be the first ones to be hurt by that. So Republicans are going to have a little conversation about how they go about doing some of these things, because it could backfire on them pretty quickly. And politically, Rick, I give them about a year. That's when the off-year elections occur. It's going to be a tough year for elections. You know, 2004, Republicans won. 2 years later, Democrats took the Congress back. 2008, Obama won. 2 years later, Republicans surged back. And that's the ebb and flow of American political history. There's nothing new in that. It's going to be pretty good. Should be a pretty good year for Democrats in 2 years in those congressional and Senate races. And so, the blue collar American who voted twice for Obama and didn't see enough change doesn't have unlimited patience. They're going to want to see better paying jobs soon, and jobs with dignity soon. And if they don't, they'll drop Trump just as they've dropped other presidents.
That's David Yepsen. He's the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU, now the new host of Iowa Politics on Iowa Public Television. David, congratulations on the new job. And as always, I hope you'll join us again in the future.
Great to be with you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.